So I'm going to do an interesting Gemara today. This is the Moshe Shuk asked me about this Gemara. So it says, it's a Ksubas Kavdal and Aleph. Okay? And it says, Hahu Yom Adinach Nafshe the Rabbi. It was on the day that Rabbi died. Okay? Rabbi Yudah Nasi, that is. Kavdal and Aleph. Okay? So on the day that Rabbi died, Gazru Rabbanan Tanisa. So the Rabbanan were gozer, they decreed a fast day. Uba'u Rachme. And they requested mercy from Hashem.
Is it Kuf
Dalet? Kuf Dalet. Okay, top line. Okay, so they requested mercy from Hashem, Amri. And they said as follows. Kalman de Omar Nach Nafshe de Rabbi. Anybody who says Rabbi died, okay, Yidkar Becherev, will be poked with a sword. Okay? Don't say that. Okay? Sounds reasonable? Okay? Not really. Okay, well, that's what they said. Salika Amse de Rabbi Legra. So the maidservant of Rabbi, who was a very high level person. Kuf Dalet. Yeah. So she went up to the attic. Okay, where I presume where Rabbi was.
Who said this? Who went?
The maidservant of Rabbi. They say that she was a high level person. There's a bunch of various stories in the Gemara that describe her deeds. Okay? So she went to the attic, to the roof, whatever. Amra, she said, I guess to Hashem, El Yonim Mevakshim Es Rabbi, the upper ones are requesting Rabbi. Okay? V'tachtonim Mevakshim Es Rabbi, and the lower ones are requesting Rabbi. In other words, I guess like the Malachim, or the higher beings are requesting Rabbi, and the lower, us lower beings are requesting Rabbi. Kuvdala Nanaf. Yiratzon, may be your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, she'chofu tachtonim es elyonim, that the lower ones will, I guess, win over, compel the higher ones. Okay? Will overcome the higher ones. Okay? So that's her tefillah. Okay. Kivan de chazoi kama zimni da'ayla besakise v'chalas tefillin. Once she saw, apparently he had a stomach ailment. Rashi says, some sort of a stomach ailment. That's what he ultimately died of. So he says, when he saw how many times he went ran to the bathroom again. They used to wear the tefillin all day long, and he can't wear tefillin when you go to the bathroom. So it says she saw how many times he ran to the bathroom and he had to take off his tefillin and put it back on. It was very painful, I guess, because he was in a very weakened state. He's always taking them on, taking them off, and apparently caused him a lot of physical pain. So Amra, she said, Yi Ratzon, this is our new tefillah, She'echofu elyonim es tachtonim, that the higher ones would win out over the lower ones, that he would die. Okay, she changed her tefillah that Rebbe would die, because he was very, very, very much in a state of pain. Okay? Okay, by the way, this comes up, and this is how I actually came across the Gemara first, is there's a Gemara, the Ran deduces from this Gemara, that if a person has an illness that they cannot recover from, it's irrecoverable, and they're in a lot of pain, then you could daven that, then you should daven that they'll die. Okay? Because of this, okay, you'll see the Gemara doesn't criticize it. Okay? That's appropriate. Apparently, if a person could heal, then they could heal. Right?
Can you still daven at the same time that they would get better?
What?
Can you still daven at the same time that they would get better?
It's talking about a case where they can't get better. He says, the Ran's lush in there, so I think he says it's impossible. It's EF Shalosh Yechia. It's impossible. So I don't know, maybe make a daven for a miracle. I guess it's saying is, I don't know. Maybe he's recommending, I guess anything's possible if you have a miracle. Yes, is saying, according to ordinary laws, it's impossible. Okay? I mean, it's true. I mean, it seems like he's holding at that stage, rather than daven for a miracle, rather you should daven that they die. I mean, there's such a thing as like a terminal disease where it's basically no one has any hope that they're going to live through it. Just a matter of extending their life over a certain amount of time, but it's a painful life. So the argument is what do you know? If they may heal, so you daven that they heal. And if they're not going to heal, but they're not in pain, so you mispal that they'll live longer. Right? After all, life is valuable. But if they're not going to heal, and they're just going to extend the law of their life, then you're just extending the pain. So what are you davening for? To extend their pain? They're in a painful, miserable existence. So apparently, you don't hold that life is intrinsically a good, and that's it. Just daven they live. Apparently they say no, then the appropriate thing to do is daven that they die. And in fact, the Gemara there says, it's based on the Gemara there. It says, in Bikur Cholim, you should visit a person so you could assess their condition to know whether you should daven that they'll die or that they'll live. Because if you don't daven that they die, then you at least benefit them that way, daven that they die. Which is interesting. It's interesting. It raises the question, so why can't you kill them? But you can't. Right? That's a different discussion. Maybe we'll get to it. But either way, so this is what she said. So when she saw, apparently they knew he was going to die. Because the Elyonim are Mavakishim, which that means that they're trying to get him. So apparently the Ram is saying he knew it wasn't healable.
Elyonim?
What?
Elyonim?
We don't know. That's why we have to figure out what that means exactly. But they knew he was going to die. She knew he was going to die, but she didn't know how long. So originally she davened, I guess, that his life would be extended. But then when she saw the pain and suffering, she davened that is on the contrary, that he would die. Okay, so what happened? So, v'lo haveshoski rabbanim ilvay rachmei. So despite that, our tefillah, the rabbis who were below, in the Beis Medrash or wherever they were, didn't stop davening. Right?
Did they know
what she I don't know. Said? I don't know if they heard what she said or just whatever. They were davening. Okay. I'm not sure if she said it loud that they heard or not. Okay. So what happened? So apparently, and you'll see, but apparently that tefillah was preventing him from dying. Because they're davening that he lives. So shakla kuza, so she took a jug. Okay, a small earthenware vessel. Shadya me'igralara, she threw it from the roof to the ground. It shattered. Ishtiku, and they went, and they stopped davening for a minute. Right? Ishtiku me'rachmi, they were quiet from their davening, v'nach nafshi the Rabbi. And Rabbi ended up dying. Okay? That's one of the tricks.
That's like that one who...
Yeah, the shaking the bush or something
with
Lebanon.
With the... interrupting between Shimon Esrei and Tachanun.
Yeah.
I forgot who it was. Somebody who was like an enemy of somebody else. His wife. Yeah. Right?
I don't know.
You told us that.
Yeah. Well, I guess I forgot.
Yeah. Because like tefillah was so strong that when he went straight into Tachanun, it was something was happening, and then somebody came in and interrupted him, and then.
Oh, really?
Somebody died.
Oh. Okay. Fine. So Amalei Rabban al Bar Kafra. So the Rabban said to Bar Kafra, I guess he was one of the Rabban there, Zil Ayin, go check on him. Which I guess, presumably, means they realized that they stopped davening and they thought maybe something was up. Maybe that was the, right? So Azal Ashkechei Dinaf Nafshe. So he went and he saw that Rabbi died. So Karay Lilibushe, so he ripped his garment, because that's what a halach of the rabbi does, you have to take kriya. Hadre Lakari Lachoray. And he turned his rib and he put it in the back of his, in his back. Okay, and he came back to the people. Pasach Amar, and then he said the following, which is like a eulogy of sorts. Er Elam Umitsukim Achzu Baron HaKodesh. So Er Elam is a reference to certain types of malachim. The word sounds familiar, it's from Hashanah and Davin, I think we say all the different types of malachim and whatever. And mitzukim are like supporters. So this references to tzaddikim, who like hold up the world, support the world. So it's saying basically, the erelim, the malachim and the mitzukim, the supporters, the tzaddikim, achzu ba'aron HaKodesh, they held on to the Aron HaKodesh. Natzchu erelim as a mitzukim. The erelim won out over the mitzukim. The Nashva Aron HaKodesh, and the Aron HaKodesh blew away. Okay? nice metaphor. Something like that, right? Amrulai, so they said to him, what do you mean? Right? Nach nafshe? Did he die? Right? Was there, because it's a weird thing to say. What kind of, right? I mean, I was telling you the interpreted version, but they just said that funny statement, right? Talking about Aaron and Malachim and so forth, right? So Amrulai, Atun Kamrisa, Vandalu Kamina. You said it, I'm not going to say it. Because right, remember, that was the original thing, that they said you don't know how to say it, and if he says it's going to be pierced by the sword. So he said, look, you guys said it, not me. Okay? That's it, basically. Okay? That's it. Okay. So, what do you guys say? Any questions on this story?
Can you read the basic outline of the story yet?
Yeah. Basically, it was the day that Rebbe was going to die. He was very ill. And stomach ailment. And, they made it, the Rabbana made a gezeiratainus on that day. And they davened for him. And they announced, anybody who says Rebbe dies will get poked with a sword. Will get killed, I guess. So the maidservant of Rebbe went up and davened for him. And she said that the higher beings and the lower beings both are requesting Rebbe. Yiratzon, that the lower beings will win out. We will, I guess, win out. Our tefillah went out. And then when she saw he had so much pain and suffering from going to the bathroom and Rebbe taking off his tefillin and on and all that, so then she davened on the contrary, that the animal went out. But the Rabbanim were still davening, and that was somehow preventing him from dying. So she took a flask or whatever, threw it on the floor, made noise, stopped them from davening. Once they stopped davening, then he died. And then this Bar Kafra went and checked. The Rabbanim said, check on him. They checked. He checked on him, and he came back and hid the fact. They didn't want to come in, openly reveal it, gave this somehow metaphorical eulogy. And then they said, did Rebbe die? He said, you said it. I didn't say it. That's that in the story.
Where'd you disappear to?
Oh, up in the attic. What do you mean? Yeah. Oh, well, I guess she doesn't necessarily hang out in the nice manager. She's the maid, so maybe she went to check on him. Well, she presumes she went to him because she saw he went to the bathroom all those times. So it could be that's where he was. So she went, or somehow she had, she saw him.
Right.
Apparently where she was down below, originally she didn't see him, but when she went up there, she saw, right? Apparently at first she didn't know. She didn't realize. But then I guess after being there for long enough, she noticed that he's in such pain. I guess they were downstairs davening or something. I don't know. Or maybe no one else, maybe that, or maybe no one else thought to daven that way. That's not an ordinary thing to daven. Right? I mean, it's like, okay, why didn't she tell them? Why did she have to do this whole thing and throw a flask down? Why not just explain it to them? Tell them, listen, you guys know what's going on up there. Right? It's a funny trick. Right? Bold. Bold trick, right? Arguably, she killed him. Right? Not too hard of an argument. I mean, it sounds like that's what happened. Okay, so did you guys hear the story like in grade school or something? No,
that's not some
right.
Version of it.
Maybe. Some version of it? Yeah, this isn't very famous, I don't think. Okay, any questions?
The first part about don't say that he died is weird.
Right, okay, that's strange. I mean, why no one should say he died? I mean,
like the, he died. Shouldn't talk.
Yeah, but what are you going to accomplish? I mean, if he dies, he dies. If he doesn't die, he doesn't die.
I have been in situations where like a person is looking near death, and then there is like a lot of talk going on about the person's condition, so that
right.
There was once a situation that I was involved in where like, it wasn't clear. Did the person die yet,
right.
Or are they still alive?
Right. But then, when they say no one should say that they died, like, what's the point? I understand.
What does it even mean? What are they trying to accomplish with that?
You're right. If Moshe says, if he died, then shouldn't you tell people to prepare the funeral arrangements?
Right.
If he didn't die, then of course don't say it.
Right.
Right.
Maybe it's just a figure of speech. They don't want to hear that news, And people say, don't tell me that happened.
Okay. I mean, they don't really mean it.
Right.
But then so you see, though, that he did.
Right, he didn't actually want to
say it. It sounds like it. But maybe you could somehow fit that in anyways.
Is there, like, such a thing as, like, it's such a terrible thing that nobody, like, not exactly nobody wants, I mean, if it happens, it happens, but, like you don't, nobody wants to, like, in that case, it looked like he didn't want to be the one to tell them. He kind of wanted them to figure it out without actually, like, inflicting that blow on them.
Right. Sounds that way. But at the same time, he did seem to want to convey it, right? I mean, obviously, you have to convey it. Right. Yes, I'm sorry, you were saying something on the phone?
Oh, I could see it being something like, if you're just saying directly that you're sort of undermining the gravity of the situation.
Right. Right. I understand. You do see people say, sit down, I have bad news, or something like that, right? There's an introduction.
Right.
You don't just spring news like that on people, right? You slowly, slowly break it to them, let them somehow wrap their head around it in a partial way, and then take it in slowly, right? Right?
Right.
Right, that's what you mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, not just for the other person, but also just because...
I understand. For you also.
You know, sometimes when something's very serious, what?
Right. For you also. You shouldn't just be able to just say...
Yeah. Can I ask another question?
Yes.
How is Philo working in this story? Because it seems very, like... I mean, maybe this is something that can happen with Sadiqin, but, like... The Philos were, like, canceling each other out, and then the moment that they stopped, the Philo doesn't apply anymore. I feel like I've heard something like... Maybe it was like Devin and Melis, the Midrash or something also, of like, he stopped davening and then, you know, then he died or something. But, I mean, is that a way that Tila can work? I don't know, what is that?
So, I mean, first of all, I think Devin and Melis was learning, if I recall correctly. But, whatever, same question. But, I mean, Tila can work that way. I mean, I don't think we have confidence that Tila's work that way. But, I mean, if someone's sick and you daven for them, I mean, it's real time. If that's what you mean, right? So, I mean, God is a Shema Tzvila, but we don't know the circumstances, but yeah, these apparently were big tzaddikim. And God is Shema Tzvila, if anything, for, like, these types of situations, you know?
I remember the other Gemara, was it maybe Rabbi Meir, maybe somebody else, who was an enemy with somebody, and his wife kept interrupting him between Shmona Esrei and Tachanun. She kept interrupting him between Shmona Esrei and Tachanun, so that he wouldn't be able to have that full tefillah, because if he did, the enemy would die. And then someone came to the door, and she wasn't able to interrupt him, and he pushed through, and
you sure
the
involved
person
me?
Died. I thought I heard it here.
No, I don't think so. No. I don't know, I mean.
It could have been too.
Yeah.
Tamar, does that sound familiar?
I couldn't hear what you were saying.
Do you remember a Gemara or something about someone saying Tachanun and Tefillah back to back and he couldn't daven? His wife tried to stop him from saying it totally because he was daven for his enemy to die or something, and one day she missed and anything like that?
Died?
Sound familiar? And the enemy died?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a dream or something.
I don't know. It's still kind of. It was sort of like instantaneous, like, nature to it. It's still kind of strange to me. Like, they could daven for him to live for the next 20 minutes. I guess that's really my question.
Yeah, why didn't they daven for him to live for 20 minutes?
Meaning that their tefillah, like, only lasts for the moment that they're sitting in tefillah, and that, like, the second they stop, it stops applying anymore.
Oh, that's a good question. That's what you mean.
Yeah, that's a question, yeah.
You mean, how does it work?
Yeah, no, I can imagine that you could,
the moment they stop davening... And look, why can't God, like, what's the right thing here? Was she right that he should die? So then, okay, they're davening, but why is God bound to listen to their tefillah? She's right, she's davening for it. So because they're davening, let's say it's bad for him, he's in pain. Because they're davening, therefore God's going to keep him alive? And what, God needs to wait for them to stop in order to be able to kill him? Right? And if their tefillah has a power somehow to get in the way of God killing him, the moment they stop, I mean, they daven that he would live for the next day or whatever, so just because they stop for a moment.
And it sounds like if they didn't continue davening constantly, then that's it.
Well, they daven, then he'll live for the next day and then take a break for 23 hours, and right? Right, why does it have to be that real time? Right, that's what you mean, I understand. Right. The whole thing is funny. What's the right thing here? It's also interesting is you don't just say, I mean, this is, I guess, a general principle about tefillah, but you don't just say, look, God knows what he's doing. What am I getting involved? The daven, he should die, he should live. God knows what's right, what's wrong. But by that measure, never daven. You say, look, what do I daven for? I'll say, look, God knows how to run the world. But apparently God's a Shemaya Tefillah, so even if something might be right or wrong, but there's such a thing that God won't necessarily get involved, and there's this list of tefillah, and if you're misbal of something, you see it as your mind sees it, and you misbal and you make a request, and God, that often will lead to a result which may not have happened without the tefillah. That's why I think it is a serious question. We learned this. Aaron was bothered by this question, but that why isn't this killing? You're not allowed to kill, you're not allowed to pull the plug on a person like this. So why are you allowed to daven for them to die? I mean, arguably she killed him. So would she be allowed to, you know, pull the plug? No. So why don't you say, look, she's davening, she killed him. She caused
the same thing.
Well, now the question is for you to differentiate, not to say that it's the same. Obviously it's not. But the question is why.
People's judgment is not perfect.
Okay.
So if a person makes the judgment and pulls the plug, they, you know, I mean, unless they're put up for some kind of miraculous thing, you're actually causing it, you know, directly. But if a person is davening for it, I mean, that's still recognizing that they are not the one who determines what happens, and they're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a person is fallible and might be making a mistake in davening for the wrong thing. He's still trusting Hashem's judgment.
Yes, but bottom line is that if she didn't daven, arguably, then maybe she wouldn't have died. And because she davened, he died. So why didn't you say that she's a cause in bringing about his death? But let's not go here. This is a different.
It's like a weird question though, because it's like saying that like anytime you daven for something, you're causing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do something.
Well, well, you sort of are. I mean, it depends what you mean. Sort of are. I mean, it depends how you use the word causation. But I mean, that's the idea of Shemaya Tefillah. I mean, you're not causing him, but yeah, you change the situation, and because you've changed the situation, God may do something. So yeah. Isn't that so?
I mean, if
she wouldn't have davened. Like, the premise of her davening is maybe he's not going to die, and maybe because God's a Shemaya Tefillah and I daven, he will die. So she's trying to bring about a result of his death, which wouldn't have happened had she not davened. Okay. So that's a type of cause. But it's not the only cause, but if you ask a king to kill somebody, that's not allowed. Now, the king may decide to listen to you or not, but you're not allowed to do that.
It's still passed over time. I mean,
it's true, but the question is in terms of that you're causing their death. It's not. You're not allowed to cause their death. So, it's true, it's different.
And it's not going to be unjust if it's, you know.
That's true, but even if it's not unjust, it doesn't mean there's no issue to kill. It's not like you're allowed to do justified killings. Like, that's the way if you kill them, you say, look, it's probably not unjust. You're not allowed to do it. You know, pull the plug. You can't just say it's unjust or whatever.
So you don't know whether or not you're just. You think you're being just. You're trying your best to be just, but you might not be. But everything that comes from Kodesh Baruch Hu is just. So if you ask Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's not going to happen if it's not just.
Okay, you could answer that. I forgot. I had a question on that answer, but. You can say that. Okay. But I don't want to start with that. Okay. So either way, though, the story, though, is what's the deal? Why doesn't God just if God wants to kill, if she's davening properly and God wants to kill him because that's the right thing, which you see seemingly it was, because you see that that's what ends up happening, so then why does God have his hands tied that he can't do it while they're davening? And why didn't you tell them, stop davening?
Running in and out of the bathroom, and not—I mean, it sounds like not living in a regular way. Why were they doubting that him to live? Like, what were they like wanting? Like, you know, there's life.
Well, first of all, it seems like they didn't know, right? She didn't know even how bad it was, so he was ill. But just because he's ill doesn't mean, right? I mean, even if he's not going to recover, but still. I mean, if a person's not in a terribly painful state, you could learn even for longer. You could still get involved in the Torah and whatever, and influencing people, and you know, whatever it is. Right? I mean, it's a chiddush, the whole idea of davening for someone to die. That's you know, typically that's what you think, you daven, they live. Yeah, but she didn't know. No one knows. She's the one who knew. But that's my question, so why didn't she just share that information with everybody else? If that's what happened.
Putting aside, like, why she didn't share her information, could have maybe even been a time thing, like, here they're already having this fast and the big tefillah session, and then she goes upstairs and realizes how terrible the situation is. So putting that aside, like, we do know that, like, in certain cases, tefillah is going to work. And you have this case where, presumably, his students were all very righteous people, too. And here they've all grouped together and they spent the entire day fasting and davening. Like, who, the personality of, what's
Rabbi Yonasi?
Yeah. It's obviously a motivation for, like, all of these people to, like, reach a higher level.
Right.
So, I think it makes sense that for the duration of their anticipation in these activities, like, it's a skus for the person to keep on living. Putting aside that he's getting worse and worse, but meaning all these people are reaching a whole different level of their own.
So their tefillah is, you know.
Their tefillah, like, it makes sense that it would have an effect.
Right.
Now, it also makes sense that, to me, I think it makes sense that, you know, an interruption, like this glass breaking on the ground outside, and completely interrupting the flow of what's going on. Could explain, like, what's the word, metaphysically, like, why he would die in that moment, and not, let's say, ignoring the...
Well, that's Myra's question, though, but, like, you know, presumably their tefillah, first of all, it's not their fault, it's just they're getting distracted by the, you know, and they're davening, it also has to be real time, why aren't they just davening on the left for another week or something, just because they stopped
but that moment. Like, they're not, the whole case is that they're, like, davening right now.
They should live for this very second.
Right.
But why should they make a tefillah like that, which depends upon their continued tefillah 24/7? You know, like, why would you form a tefillah like that? You know? Like, Shiar tefillah was that the lower beings would overcome the upper beings. Seemingly, it would mean that he'd cause some sort of a continuation of his life.
Okay. So we say what upper beings mean?
Yeah, that's a good question, also. You know, what I was just going to say that. What's the whole deal? The lower beings, the upper beings, and requesting him. Like, what's this battle going on here?
Her
tefillah
is like, why isn't her tefillah the same as theirs? How come she's davening? Like,
the
different
tefillah
about their tefillah? I think that was
still
funny,
about
someone's
tefillah. Yeah, that's true. It's a funny tefillah, her tefillah. So why don't we start there? What do you think? That's like kind of at the beginning of the story, right? I mean, one thing we don't... They said, we have a little bit of a thing. They don't want anybody to say that, right? Don't say that kind of thing. Don't say Rabbi died. We can't handle it. Something like that. That's what like with Tamar said. I think that's a good... You were talking about the end of the story, but they're saying is Rabbi is very, very, very important to us. He was a leader of a great influence. Really, he moved a generation. And she was... They were saying is, don't take this lightly. This is going to be a big blow to people when he dies. don't just come out and blurt out everything. That's not, you got to be careful. This is going to influence people badly. And a leader, when a great giant of a generation dies, it impacts the generation. And as they're saying, arguably, not that don't say it, but we got to have exercise the highest level of sensitivity to the emotions of the people at the moment, you know, when he does pass. Obviously, you're going to have to say it, but do something, which like Barkhava ended up doing. You know, they're making an announcement. This is a very delicate time, and people's psyches are set very, you know, on edge here. Okay? So obviously, you don't say it, but don't say it like that, you know? Not Lashed Rabbi. Okay, fine. So that's fine. What's our tefillah? The lower being, the higher beings are Mavakish Rebbe, and the lower beings are Mavakish Rebbe. He wrote something that the lower beings will win out. Right? Will, you know, subordinate.
He's like,
Davka
Hashem will win about the exceptions of their tefillah?
Sounds that way. Yeah. The lower beings, tefillah, who went out over the upper beings' request of Rabbi.
It doesn't matter
what
they're requesting
him. I was just going to ask that. Oh. Yeah, his time is up. Okay, maybe like she's saying, his time is up. They say, he's being requested, his time is up. Let's call it that. It's the force of the nature. Let's say that with Malach and Hashem, the force of nature. It seemed to be you calling Rabbi. He's on his deathbed. The time is near. Right? His time has come. So they sense, she's sensing, which is good with what the Ron said. Remember the Ron deduced from the story that if someone's unhealable, how do they know the story means unhealable? But it could be that's what it means. That there are other beings that are requesting you, means the forces of nature have it in for Rabbi. She's judging from his condition, they're coming for him. It's not just an illness. He just has a sore throat or, you know, stomach ache or whatever. This is the beginning of the end. They're seeking him out. But, at the same time, the lower beings on earth are not ready to give him up. We need him. Right? He's a great influence on everybody, and while the forces of nature are calling him, the forces of tefillah are also calling upon him. There's like a struggle between the laws of, I guess, the laws of nature, Ashkacha Klalos, I guess, right, the natural forces, and Ashkacha Pratis, or whatever, tefillah, the lower beings with tefillah, because it could keep him alive. Right? There's a tug of war here. Between what would happen according to pure natural forces, the higher beings would have their right. And he would enter the world of the Malachim, the Olam Shamos, and that, right? It could be it depicts it that way also, because it's like the Malachim are seeking him out. It means just a different point, because when a person dies, it's not the end, the end, the end. It means it goes to the world of the Malachim, the upper beings, there's Olam Haba. So you don't want to depict death. The proper way to depict death is the person goes to the upper world. Right, because he continues to exist in a different state. So they're seeking him out. That means according to the natural law, the forces are going to get him. But at the same time, the lower people also want him. So she's davening that, I guess, Ashkacha should win out over the natural order. Right? The Shemesh should win out. I know it is interesting. She's like taking a, you know, bird's eye view, tefillah. Instead of just they were presently destined and he would heal. Whatever, they'd get better. But she's kind of diagnosing the situation a little bit more accurately. She's, you know, she's, maybe she has more knowledge about what's going on or whatever. Okay.
Maybe she's
dominating
for them, for the people. Like,
they
want her, you know, like, they need him still. They want
her,
you know,
this
time is up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I understand. You mean, do it not only for him, do it for them.
Right.
It's another dimension of the tefillah. They need him. Right.
Isn't that what they'd be dominating anyway?
Maybe. They could also be dabbing me on his behalf. Keep him alive. Because it's good for him. Could be she. I don't know. Yeah, it could be it's implicit in there too, also.
Natural order?
Yeah, I was saying two things. Yeah, it's for the higher of the Malachim of Hashem means the natural forces which God set into play that take a person up to the higher world. They remove his physical body and take him into the world of the Neshamas. That whole system, that a person dies and they go and their Neshama goes to a different place, a different existence, that system is calling on Rabbi. He's met his time has come. At the same time, people are not quite ready for it. But at the same time, there is a natural order. So she's davening that will be shifted. Be shifted towards people's needs. But then she saw what? That it was too much. For Rebbe, this is just not, it's not feasible, it's not a life, and it's not fair for the people to keep Rebbe alive. That's not a, you can't do that. It's one thing if Rebbe's life was worthwhile for him, but if he's just in a pain, life of pain and suffering, so he comes first, and primarily he's deserving, he needs death, this is like torturing him. So now she's misspelled on the contrary, even though they need him, but let the Hopper forces run out. He needs to die now. This is not good for him. And the people will have to deal with it. Right? The people will have to deal with it. But they kept davening, right? So why didn't she tell them? But it's not.
Yeah. Like, they can't even say
he died. Yeah. Yeah, okay. But she knew that was not going to fly. She's all right. They saw the sensitivity of the people was such that they could not handle it. They couldn't even handle it. They're overly sensitive. You can't just get up and make an announcement to everybody, let's change our tefillahs and let's all daven out loud that you should die. Right? They can't do that. She apparently was at a high level. And she was able to see this point. But just because she saw the point doesn't mean that they're able to see the point. You know? She's one individual. But to get the group as a whole, she saw, forget about it. She can't do that to them. They wouldn't be able to handle it. They would be able to handle the whole thing. You can imagine, right? You can't do something like that. But at the same time, she was convinced. She wasn't in doubt about her assessment. She was certain. And she knew they didn't have all the information that she had. So they're going to keep davening, but she knew that this was the right thing to do. But at the same time, they were davening. Okay, so why did she have to... So just daven. So why did she have to distract them? Right? Why can't God, if she's right, let her daven and let God listen to her? God can't. God really beholden to people's tefillah in that way?
Maybe for them, they would not feel like their tefillah was like failing or not heard or something like that. But that didn't happen when they weren't out.
Right. It could be. That's good. That would be a blow to them. But here it is. They need Rabbi so much and they're fasting and davening, and right? And while they're davening, he just dies. It could be that would be like cause like a crisis of their emunah, or just that hurt that much, it would break a person. I don't know every person, but she knew it could be that God was not for their sake, not just because they can't suffer his loss. Look, that they have to deal with. But like that type of a thing, for them to die while they're doing it, is like, is too much. God, apparently, she saw that it wasn't working. She deserved death, but it wasn't working. So she judged, that must be why. Because God's not going to do it. It would break them, or many of them. Right? Then you say this as like Acher, I think, I don't know, this is a complex story, but Acher, I think, saw a guy, kid, doing Kibbutz Avayim and climbing up the Dish of Hakan, and he died and fell off a ladder, and that was like a big kasha. How could he die while he's doing these mitzvahs, which say Arichas Yamin? So it could be is like, she knew that would make it. It's one thing for them to have suffer Rebbe's loss. Another thing to suffer Rebbe's loss while they're in the middle of their tefillah. That was just, you know. So, therefore, she knew that in order to allow him to die and for her tefillah to work, she had to basically get them to stop. And then they could say, oh, well, we weren't davening. That's like different. It affects the person different psychologically. If you die when you're not davening, you die in the middle of the night, you die whenever when they stop. So she did it, you know. And you see that they thought that. Then they said, oh, check on him. We stopped. Like, once it broke their kavanah, their whatever, they realized, okay, so now we're not davening for him. Now maybe it's... Maybe now he died. You know? So they checked it. In fact, it was true. Right? But not because... I mean, it could be there's some metaphysical thing to it, but it's hard to see why that has to be, like the moment God has to do it. You know, I'd rather say it's because God knew how it would affect them. Psychologically, these things do make a difference. You know? But not metaphysically it matters at that second. But maybe there's some metaphysical reality to it also. I'm not sure. But the psychological thing sounds reasonable. So what happened? So then, sure enough, he died, right? So what happened? So then Bar Kafra came, and he's in line with what he said before, right? What Tamar said before is that he couldn't really break it to them. Exactly. Give me 1 second, I just think I can send you. So then they, so he knew that he couldn't break it to them. Bar Kafra knew, right? But at the same time, he had to tell them, right? So what's this thing he's saying? The malachim and the supporters of the world were holding the bed or something, holding the arm. Yeah, they held Aron HaKodesh and the Arelim went out. And the Aron blew away. Right? So what's that? What's he doing? Why is he saying that? What does he mean? So is it just a, you know, a backhanded way of saying Rebbe died? Something more to it than that?
Sounds like the same thing that the
maid servant
was saying.
Right. Okay, good. So why is he saying that? Why is that? Why is he telling them that? So why does he have to even say anything? Why not just say, listen guys, I have bad news. One thing you realize, right then and there. Or whatever. There's other ways of beating around the bush than saying this whole story. Like she was, that was her request, and she was formulating his feelings based on the situation, but why does he have to give this story? What's he trying to accomplish? So what would you think? What would be his goal here? Imagine if you were learning the story correctly. What would be Yuval Kapra's, you know, goal here, besides for not, you know, breaking into them, you know, subtly?
Besides that?
Besides for not just totally coming and blurting it out. What else would he try? What else does he have to take into account to try to accomplish?
It's not that it's Felix or not, you know, just like Felix.
Okay, that's one thing, right? And as if the whole thing was that their tefillahs are just going to be unanswered, so presumably he has to somehow talk to that issue, right? Because that's why, in fact, God didn't kill him right away, right? So how is he addressing that?
He's saying that the, you know, the forces of nature are too strong, that just, you know,
right.
Just kind of forgot, he was
saying. Right. And it's not just pshat that he just thought his tefillahs are worthless. But that the Malachim are claiming him, and that it came his time, and this is the way of the world, that comes the time when a person enters the home of the Malachim, enters the world of the non-physical, and this is his time, they were claiming him. So we were claiming him, but they were also claiming him, and it was a battle. It wasn't just like it feels worthless. He just died like nothing. No, there was a, this was his time, and therefore we were trying to hold on to the Aaron, the Torah of Rabbi, and the benefit of Rabbi. But the Rabbi, where the Torah of Rabbi was going into the Olam HaShamos, and there was a struggle. And what happened? Right. And Nashba Aronaka, I'm sorry, then the Arelim went out. Right. So it's not like our tefillah was denied as much as the request of the Malachim went out. And it blew, the Aronaka just blew away. Because we lost them. So he's conveying that we lost him, but conveying that it was we lost him because there was a strong counterforce, which is the way God made the world, and his malachim, who would take people at a certain point in time. And not that our tefillah was nothing, but it's just our tefillah didn't quite stand up to the other forces in the universe and God's malachim. But now Rabbi and his Torah are up in Shemayim, which means Rabbi's neshama still exists. There's another thing she's conveying, is that the loss, he's trying to break the loss. And we do that also with, like Kalmalai, and like even the minhag of having like a candle in Beis Avel to remind you that it's neshama. Like the idea of, it's a big idea in the Torah is in death, that death isn't a termination, but it's just a change to a different state, but the neshama continues to exist. So that helps ease the blow. You know that he's not gone. He's just gone from us. He blew away. Like the Aronkos is blown away. Blown away means that he's not terminated. He's just somewhere else. And so that helps them, that should help them deal with it also. But even so, he wasn't going to say it, you know? Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, you can appreciate this better. But, like here's the Gemara they quote here in the Art Scroll. It says, the Gemara says, throughout all the years of Rebbe's suffering, the world never required rain. And it's, right? In other words, somehow, he, like, guarded the generation against bad decrees. And for 13 years of Rebbe, suffered from tooth disease, and all those 13 years, no woman died in childbirth in Eretz Yisrael, and no woman miscarried in Eretz Yisrael. It's another Gemara. But somehow, like whatever it is that Rebbe was a great leader and a zechus for the people. He was a great influence for the people. He was a supporter of people. He was very wealthy. He had a lot of stock. I mean, he was like a real foundation of the whole generation. So you can imagine. I mean, as part of, you know, we really don't appreciate it fully because you don't understand what Rabbi was, but yeah. Okay. Any questions, comments?
Well, that last thing.
No, I was going to say is to really appreciate the full import of the story, you have to try to get into their head about how important Rebbe was to the generation. He was, I don't know how important, you know, but the greater he is, the more the reasonable this whole story becomes, you know, the more impactful his life and his death would be to the generation. Give you a different sense of the story.
It makes sense also, not just that his death would be such a blow, but also that they shouldn't feel that, like, their connection to, like the system of the Derech HaChaim of Torah somehow being, like, diminished. Like, if he would have died while they were davening, not if they lose him, but it's like a blow, like a, you know, like a, would make it even worse.
Yeah, right.
No, like, does Tefillah matter, you know? Like you were saying psychologically, that would be more important than in this particular situation when they were losing him, that they not have that kind of, like, why can't you just handle it? I mean, because of what they were losing, they needed to know that it wasn't like they were also losing the effect, you know.
Yeah, right, the relationship.
Tefillah,
right.
You know?
Yes, correct. Correct.
With that last source that you just quickly said,
yes.
That, like, in all of the years that he had a toothache or something, that he was suffering from that no one died in childbirth. I could understand that if it was, like, just about his life and his leadership and whatever he stood for, but what would him being in pain have to do with it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I just read the quote, Mara's Arsenal quote. I didn't look them up. I know it's a good question. Both of them are. Both sources are. They're saying that.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's true.
While he was in his bowl, you know, affect the leadership, he still has such a strong influence.
Maybe.
What was that?
She said maybe even though he was in a compromised state, he still benefited. He still had an influence on them. But then you'd say it means his life also.
Right.
It kind of sounds like it's those years. I don't know. No. You have to look them up. The Gemara is... What?
For sure, say
you
like, no?
You would think so, but I don't know. It's a funny thing to say that. I should say even throughout. I don't know. It's Gemara and Bav Metzia 85a and Bereishis Rabba 96.5. So I don't know if you want to check them out. But I don't know. I didn't check them out. Good question. Yeah. Just back to that other question that what you were talking about. So, you know, why it's not a problem to be a cause. So, I know that's one of the answers you could say. I forget if I like that answer or I had a question on it. But another answer I wanted to say is that you can't kill a person. Because really, you could judge that it's this person should die. Okay? It's according to your mind. So, it's your best assessment, the person should die. And that's why she's davening for him. And you should. That's what is appropriate. But there is an isser of killing. Halacha doesn't have an allowance to kill people. The law, you can't have allowances like that in the halachic system. The halachic system says you're not allowed to kill a person without the bezdin, without whatever, there's parameters. But you can't just assess. The Isser Tzicha doesn't say you can't kill valuable people, but people who, whatever, justified killings. The system can't allow justified killings, you know? So systematically you're not allowed to kill them. And you're not allowed to cause them to die. But that's a halachic thing. Philosophically, you could, so to speak, could cause him to die, but halachically, you don't have a right to do that because of the halachic system. Now, the question is that if you cause a person to die through tefillah, is that a halachic cause? So that could be the answer is metaphysical causes aren't halachic, aren't recognized by halacha. But if you cause him, even though it is a cause, but you're dealing with a halachic yeser, philosophically, you really should be able to cause him to die, but the problem is halachically, you can't. But halachically, that doesn't register, because what are you doing? You're not, the causation is beyond the physical, that's not the type of causation which isn't recognized by halacha. Just like halacha doesn't recognize things which are microscopic, or whatever. That's not recognized by a halachic thing. I can't cause him to die, but you don't say I can't cause him to die through metaphysical causes, which aren't, just outside of the ordinary realm of causation. So I may be causing him to die metaphysically, but that's not the isser. The problem is just getting around the isser of killing. You can't kill somebody. So you can't pull the plug because, not because it's wrong philosophically, but because it's wrong halachically. But now it's not wrong halachically because you're not using something which is even registered or is recognized by the halachic system as a cause. You don't say that's like a cause in halacha. So,
So you're saying, like, even before Matan Torah, there's still, like, since the time of Noah, there's just...
Yeah, there's a law. Like, Rasicha is a law on their parameters, and it's formalized based upon, what's called killing. But here, that's not called killing.
So meaning halakha can't distinguish a case specifically where...
Pull the plug. Not insofar as killing. I mean, there are nafkaminos. I mean, these are all kinds of shilos, but I think vis-a-vis the mitzvah of hatsala, saving their life, there are differences like that. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to save a short life or a long life or a painful life. But in terms of killing, I don't think there's any condition which... I mean, I would say halacha cannot recognize it, but I don't think it does. I don't think there's ever a case where you're allowed to actively kill someone. Because of any state like this. You know? But, right, you can't indirectly cause it. You can't do anything which is causes. But these are all causes. Tell the king is a type of a cause in the physical world. But tefillah isn't a cause in the physical world. It's a different type of a cause. Yeah, and the other answers that you're saying is, look, it's only going to happen. It'll only happen if God thinks it's good, so therefore...
They're not contradictory, no.
Yeah, I have to remember. I forget if there was a question on that, or we just thought that, you know. It's a clever answer, the second one. Yeah, I can't remember who I had thought of it, but... You know, it's a nice answer anyways, you know. It defines the question well, and then it's, you know... Yeah, all right. Any other questions? Comments?
Sorry, can you explain again why she didn't want to tell them
Because I think that she saw that they were super sensitive about Rabbi's death. They were, like, not in a state where they're able to even handle someone saying it. So she knew that she was not going to be able to get the mass of people to start davening that Rabbi will die. That's just people could not psychologically handle that. So she was at a level where she could, but she knew that wouldn't fly on a group. The people would just go, you know, they'd panic. People can't do that, generally.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, also, what do you think? I'm thinking, like, the broader context of, like, what the story is coming to, like, teach us. I guess, is it about, like, a relationship to our Rav, or the concept of, mm-hmm. like, death in halakha, I guess, versus
right.
life?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good question. You know, what are the takeaways?
Yeah.
First of all, it's a good question. What are the takeaways? But I don't exactly... Like, there's the story itself is an interesting story with a lot of ideas contained in it. I don't know that the premise of the question is like... Like, what's the moral of the story, you know? But although, I mean, I think you're asking a valuable question, but depends on the way, you know. Like, I think...
I guess I don't know what the Gemara is saying. What was the Gemara bringing this story?
Oh, it sometimes tells us stories. I mean, it's part of a greater context about Rabbi dying. I don't think it's coming to tell us any particular thing, but although I think there are many things we can learn from it. I'm just saying, you know... Like, oftentimes, like, there are a lot of interesting ideas. I do think, we do see how people relate to death, how people relate to the Rabbi. Tefillah, you see the way Hashgachah works and how complex, you know, Schar Va'onesh is. Sensitivity, how to be sensitive to people's needs, you know. Yeah, how God in his Hashgachah, there's many things factored into Hashgachah, at least according to the way, you know. How does it fit in? I know. I don't really know. But I think it comes up. Oftentimes, Gemaras do that. They're not exactly well telegraphed. Like, let's teach the following point. They kind of just tell stories and, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of Gemaras talking about the death of Rabbi. It's a Gemara about Rabbi, and there are a lot of stories about Rabbi's death. And this is one of the stories. Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, sure.
Thanks.
Okay, anyone else? All right, so have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.